Blog
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm a guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm working for the state on my highway patrol. Well, you know me when you see me, cause my door's painted white, with my siren screaming and my flashing red light. I work all day and I work all night, just to keep a law and order, trying to do what's right. If I write you out a ticket, then you better drive slow. I'm just doing my job on the highway patrol. Got a star on my car and one on my chest.
Good evening and welcome to Audio Road. I'm your host, retired transport officer Dale Howard, and I'll be joining you for this hour this evening. Kevin and Lisa have the evening off, and I just want to thank them for the opportunity of sharing this hour with you. We can talk about whatever compliance concerns you've got. I retired out of a 23-year law enforcement career. The last 7 years of my career were spent devoted entirely to commercial vehicle enforcement. I was a CVSA instructor for my agency, as well as a dangerous goods hazardous materials inspector. I've been an owner-operator full-time now for the last 3 years, at least to a major carrier, and a company driver part-time, full-time for 13 years prior to that. So, we'll start the show off. I'm hosting the show and screening the calls. So what we'll do is, if you've got any questions, anything you want to add to the program, please push 1. And what I'll do is I'll give you the last 4 digits of your phone number, and that way you'll know it's you. A couple of observations. The CVSA road check wrapped up the first week of June. The numbers coming in so far indicate we're hanging in there right around that 21% out-of-service ratio. And I find that just unbelievable. This is the most publicized check that is run North America-wide. We all know what's out there. We know what they're looking for. And we let them catch us. Seems brakes and hours of service violations seem to run the gamut again. And I just don't get it. If you want to comment about that, then please just jump right in. I was on a trip to Los Angeles this week and going through Arizona. I was passed by a truck, flat deck carrier, carrying a load of the rebar pins that are used to in the construction of the interstates. We've all seen them on the side of the road. They're the bundles of pins. They're about a 1-inch diameter pin, about 2 feet long. I didn't pay too much attention to them. The load looked reasonably secured. Well, crossed into Nevada, and here one bundle has left the trailer and landed in the middle of the highway. Just, mind-boggling that we let that happen to ourselves. There's a lawyer starving to death on every street corner, and boy, you're setting yourself up for disaster when you allow that to happen. Just imagine a car running over one of those pins, kicking one up or another truck, and popping that through somebody's windshield. Winds up in a fatality accident. All of a sudden, you're in big trouble. And that little incident of not taking the time to tie your tie the load down properly or check could wind you up in prison. It's just really not worth it. So, without further ado, we'll go to the phones, and our first caller this evening is 9224.
How are you doing?
And good evening, and welcome to this program.
Hold on, I was talking about better paper here. There.
That's 9224. You're live on the show.
Yeah, I got a couple questions for you there. Coming from your enforcement officer,
nope, I'm losing you. Tell you what, I'm going to put you back on hold, and hopefully your signal will clear back up and we'll come back up to you. If you want to jump into the show and you're listening on the internet, please give us a call. And I'm just finding the number here. Lisa was kind enough to give that to me. And I'm going to have to find that again. I seem to have misplaced it. So we will go back to the phones and we'll catch back up with 7943.
Hey, how's it going? Go ahead.
Thanks.
Good deal. I was. I have a question about, you know, the CSA 2010 and all the guidelines that they have set. Now, they're saying that this is supposedly for the drivers, it's more for the carriers and to keep the carriers in check, correct?
Well, partially true. It is about the drivers. The push here is to identify the problem children in the industry and deal with the problem. For example, if you're a driver that is just has a history of non-compliance, you can keep jumping through the hoops now and go from carrier to carrier to carrier to carrier and basically run amok in the industry, and there's really no controls. With CSA 2010, the driver is going to be held equally as accountable as the carrier for their behavior. So when you are involved in a roadside inspection and if you pass with flying colors, that is going to go on your driver profile. If you've got a number of violations, an out-of-service order, that too is going to go on your profile.
Okay, you said that we're going to be held equally, but yet it stays on the driver's record for 3 years and only on the carrier for two. Why would that be? Go ahead.
You know, somebody way smarter than me dreamed all this stuff up, and if I had the opportunity to write this legislation, I would have written it a little differently. You know, I'm not sure why they came up with the criteria they did.
Right. The other thing I was thinking is that, you know, they're going back 3 years on someone, you know, as far as from whenever it starts, they're going back 3 years. I mean, so the stuff that's already happened to us is counting against us. And, you know, maybe we'd have run things differently. You know, I don't have anything on my record hardly as far as that would, you know, go against me. Of course, they all go against you. But maybe we would have did things differently if we had known something that happened 3 years ago was going to affect us now, you know.
Well, absolutely.
And I don't think that that's really fair that they even go back. If you want to go back to get a rating system started and go back 3 years, that's fine, but don't count it against us. Just use it as a starting point to say, okay, certain carriers are going to get ranked from, let's say, 1 to 10 or whatever. I don't know what the whole thing is. But let's say, and so, you know, so we're going to rank everybody with a number as opposed to every other person out there. But then, you know, but then start everybody off from a clean slate. You know, does that
make
sense?
Oh, absolutely. What they've done is that information is correct. roadside inspections, citations are going to stay with you for 3 years, accidents for 5 years. However, as the years go on, the infractions drop in severity. So if you had, you know, if you had a bad month three years ago, you know, you haven't accumulated, that won't have the same weight as if you had a bad month last month. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that definitely makes sense. I mean, it to me, it shouldn't, you know, count at all. I mean, from today, once it starts, I don't mind, you know. Now that I know this is going to be the law going from here forward, I don't mind that counting against me. I don't want anything counting against me from, you know, I've got a speeding ticket as one of the one few things that I have from back in September of 07, and it was when I first started driving, was on the road. I had never been on that direction. And in Colorado, as a matter of fact, on I-70, when you come out of Eisenhower Tunnel, you know, it's got the speed limit there. And it says trucks in yellow, and I thought that was a precautionary speed limit. I was sitting at 33,000 pounds going down the hill at 56 miles an hour and had everything set up, not touching the brakes at all. Got pulled over, got a ticket for 56 in a 30, which, of course, is more than 25 over, and had no clue that that was an actual speed limit, you know, until that particular time, you know, and that – you know, now 3 years now, 3 years later, it's almost ready to drop off of, you know, the whole 3 year thing. But at the same time, it's something that, you know, it happened 3 years ago, you know, and I don't see that has any bearing on how I drive today.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, I get that. And, you know, like I say, it's, you know, I'm not sure why they, you know, went on the system they did, so we're kind of stuck with it. Thank you very much for jumping in there, and I'm going to move on to the next caller. As I was saying, Lisa was kind enough to provide me with a phone number. For those of you who are listening online, why don't you jump in? The number is 347-884 8327. And if you want to jump into the discussion, please press 1, and I'll be more than happy to take your calls. We are going to go now to 8699, I believe. And good evening.
Good evening,
you're live on the show.
Yeah, this is Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Like to personally thank you for helping out and everything you've done for Kevin and all the audience out here. It's always very informative. And, I mean, like you were just trying to explain there, the whole thing with CSA 2010, you know, a lot of people seem to think it's going to be so much more strict or, you know, tougher to get along with and all that than the SAFER system was. And in reality, it's not that much different.
And no, you're absolutely right.
They're worried about the past, which, you know, I mean, I understand that. If you got a couple of tickets, you think, but when you average that across the industry, I mean, that's, if you got, you know, 5 tickets over a 3 year period, you're probably just in the average.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely
right. Minor things, you know, a logbook violation, one break out of adjustment during an inspection. It's...
Sure. When you look at road check, and that's supposed to be a snapshot of our industry, and, you know, we're running around that 21% out of service rate, then, yeah, you know, really the bar hasn't been set that high. So if we do what we're supposed to do and, you know, conduct ourselves in the professional manner that we want to be treated as, really CSA 2010 is a non-issue. If you don't play nice and you don't deal well with others and you want to operate outside that box, you know, it's really going to change how you do business, because it's we just can't operate that way anymore. The special interest groups, like it or not, have Washington's ear. And you know, we've all seen the poster children in our industry that demand these rules and regulations. And, you know, I've been out here for, I've had my CDL for 33 years, and I've seen the industry evolve, and, you know, I'm not very proud of some of the things that we as an industry have accomplished. And, you know, it's we are kind of our own worst enemies. Now, having said that, you know, now's the time. They've drawn the line in the sand, so we just need to comply.
I'm hoping, you know, like you say, that 21% out of service or violation, you know, that bar, you know, if that's the industry standard or average, I should say, not a standard, you know, I'm hoping that improves. I'd like to see it down in the single digits.
Absolutely. And you know what? There's no reason it won't. But it starts individually. And I was in Southern California this week, dropped my trailer, picked up another trailer. There's five company trucks there from a nationwide carrier, big carrier. I back under my trailer, get out, hook everything up, chalk my wheels, air my trailer out, put my coveralls on to do my pre-trip inspection, and I'm looking at four puzzled faces, wondering, what are you doing? And, you know, I finished my inspection, and it we're not talking hours. You know, it takes me 20 minutes to crawl a trailer. And I look around, I'm the only guy left in the parking lot. Well, you know what? When they get whacked at a scale, please don't blame the evil DOT officer for out there harassing you and picking on you, because you brought this on yourself.
Yeah. Well, and the last time you hosted the show there, you know, we talked about volunteering for inspections to stack the deck, you know. And believe it or not, I did that a couple weeks after that and found out, you know, it must have happened within a day or two, because I don't crawl under my trailer, truck and trailer every day, but at least once a week I grease it and, you know, measure the brakes, everything, and hear a snap ring on one of the S-cans that broke off or fell off or whatever, you know, and so the slack adjuster was sliding back and forth a little bit. It was really no big deal, but so I got one brake out of service. And as long as it wasn't a steer axle, it's not an out of service, but it, you know, wasn't a perfect inspection.
No, and that's, yeah, I guess I really should have qualified that, and yeah, make sure everything is up to speed before you go in and volunteer. Did he tap you for it, or just?
He just noted it on there as a comment, so there's no violation or anything, but, I mean, still, to me, I'd rather know that it's, you know, something could have went wrong, the slack adjuster could have binded in there and a brake would have locked up. I mean, it could have caused all kinds of problems not knowing about it.
No, absolutely, and that's kind of how I view the CVSA. I go out of my way every quarter to get an inspection. Because you know what? I'm making the payments on my truck. I'm an owner-operator. And I want to know what the condition of my truck is. And I crawl mine weekly. But, you know, you still miss things. And you get so accustomed to things that you kind of get that tunnel vision, and you may miss things. And it's nice to have another set of eyes out there to pick it up before it costs you big money or, heaven forbid, a wreck.
Yeah. Well, anytime you're in a shop, you know, that's, just ask for a, you know, DOT inspection without, you know, not paying for the sticker and all that. Just somebody else's eyes that, you know, looks for other little things that you might yourself look over every once in a while. It's always good to have an extra set of eyes.
And you know what? You bring up an excellent point that really for $60 at the TA, you can't go wrong with, you know, every quarter or every 6 months having that done. And it's pretty cheap insurance for, you know, for the little things. And thank you very much for jumping in there, Matt. We're going to move on, take our next caller, who is going to be 4844. And welcome to the show.
Hey, this is...
Carl?
Sorry about that. We're going to try that again. Big fingers, little teeth. Technology is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, there was I had a nice little chat with myself here, but hey.
Hey, well, there was a reason I was not on the bomb squad. It would have been a very short career.
I hear you. Listen, this is Hugh, and I tuned in a little late. I missed the intro, and I have no idea who I'm speaking with.
Hugh, it's Dale Howard. I'm a retired transport officer. I've crossed over and joined the dark side, or came to the light, depending on who you ask, and jumping in here tonight to fill in for Kevin and Lisa. They've got the evening off.
Good. Maybe you can resolve an issue for me.
I'd like to fix that.
In the hours of service regulation, there is an allowance for personal conveyance. The way I understand it, it's actually an issue between the driver and the company. It's not even an issue so much between enforcement and the driver. But if you're off duty, not under a load, on your 34-hour break or whatever, you need to run to Walmart, jump in your truck, run to Walmart, do your shopping, come back, and just remain off duty the whole time. Do I understand that correctly?
You do. Now, the criteria for that is you cannot have a trailer. You must be bobtailing.
I heard that you could actually be pulling an empty trailer, but that's reasonable. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's I got to quote the party line. So you must.
Well, I was thinking it was Officer Dial that I heard say you could even be pulling an empty trailer, but I may have misunderstood him on that.
Well, you know, and that's officer discretion, but the way it's interpreted for personal conveyances, you must be bobtailing.
Okay, bobtailing. Okay,
and you must return back to where you've gone off duty. For example, if you're in Wheeler Ridge, California at the Petro, you're doing a 36-hour restart waiting for a load at IKEA, you decide to bobtail to Bakersfield.
Okay.
You're free to bobtail to Bakersfield, and that's off-duty time. Do whatever you're going to do. You must return to Wheeler Ridge, California, and start
before I go back on duty. Okay.
Correct.
Now, let's say I've done that, and I'm sitting, you know, I've gone to Bakersfield and did some shopping, come back, and I'm sitting in my truck with my laptop up on my steering wheel and, you know, surfing the Internet. What's my duty status?
You're off duty.
I'm sitting in the driver's seat.
Yeah, you can be sitting on the hood. You're still off duty.
Oh,
the only
now that's my misunderstanding, because my whole life I've been told anytime I'm on or in the truck and not resting in the sleeper berth, I'm on duty.
No, that's a valid misconception. No, if you're not under dispatch and you're not responsible for the truck, you're off duty. The same goes if you're at a customer unloading, and they're going to be 5 hours. You're backed into the dock, and there's a Walmart half a block down the street.
Right.
If you're free to leave your truck, you're off duty. If you decide to sit in the driver's seat and read a pocketbook, as long, you know, the litmus test for this is as long as you are not responsible and you are free to physically leave the property, you're off duty.
Well, I guess that is a commonly held misconception, because I've had it drilled into me for years and years that if I was on or in the truck and not resting in the sleeper berth, I was on duty.
Nope.
So that's wrong.
Yep.
Yeah,
yeah, if you're not...
My dilemma has always been, I can drive the truck off-duty, but I can't sit in it off-duty?
Yes. Nope,
but that's a misconception, you're saying.
Absolutely. In Canada, they've actually defined personal mileage in the regulation, and you are allowed to go 75 kilometers, which works out to 46.6 miles. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to use your truck for personal conveyance, what I would do in the remarks column is write that in there. Personal mileage, your starting odometer, and mileage, and the miles you drove, and just a note in there, personal miles. That way, it's the CYA.
Right. That's just a CYA. That's not part of the law.
It is in Canada. It's not in the U.S.
Well,
covering.
I appreciate you clarifying that for me, because I've been really confused about that for a long time.
Well, and you know what? There is so much bad information floating around. You get the truck stop lawyer sitting at the TA lunch counter expanding on his knowledge on the legislation and regulations. And, yeah, there, you know, it's the story gets relayed and rehashed 700 times. And, yeah, no, it's easy to see where the misconceptions were. And, you know, before I got into enforcement, hey, I bought into all that too, because, you know, some old-timer said it. It must be true.
Well, just for clarification, I never heard that from an old-timer or a truck stop lunch counter attorney. I heard this from the safety directors of the companies that I worked for during orientation or during safety instruction or periodic safety meeting. That's where I got that information from.
Okay. You know what? And that brings up another point that if company policy is company policy, it certainly doesn't override the regulation. But
absolutely. I understand that. But, either every company had the exact same policy, or I'm pretty sure they stated this as the hours of service regulations. But none of that matters. What matters is what is right. And what is right is that I can be sitting in the driver's seat of my truck as long as I am free from any responsibilities of loading, unloading, or under dispatch or anything. I can be off duty.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Great. Because I've actually heard some shows on the Road Dog channel where they've had enforcement officers on the show, and that question comes up, and they say, you be sure if you say you're in a sleeper berth, you're in a sleeper berth. Or if you're in the truck stop, you're off duty. But if you're sitting in the cab, then you're on duty. And I've heard that from any number of sources that present themselves as being official.
True.
So you can see how we could be confused about that.
Well, absolutely. No, Trooper Dial actually on the Lockridge report, summed it up the best. And he concurred the same thing. If you are free to physically leave the property, then you're off duty. There's nothing you have to the property.
That's a big load off my shoulders.
Yeah, no, that's the litmus test. And, for years it has been drilled into us that, you have to log, that's on duty. And if you're responsible for that truck and you have to stay there and the guard is not going to let you off the property, well, then technically you are on duty, not driving. But, yeah, no, if you can walk down the street to Denny's or over to Walmart or Target, you're off duty.
You're off duty. All right. Great. Thanks a lot for that clarification. I'll let you get on to the myriad of callers I'm sure you have waiting.
Thank you very much. You always a pleasure. We are going to go now to 6321. And good evening. You're live on Audio Road.
Hey, have you happened to see your file from CSA 2010?
Sorry, I see the which?
Have you seen your file that the FMCSA has compiled on you for CSA 2010?
I have not.
I have seen mine, and it's a joke.
Okay.
I requested mine, the free file that you're allowed to request from the FMCSA website through the Freedom of Information Act. They sent it to me both digitally and hard copy, and it's an absolute joke. There's only, out of the probably 30, 35 inspections I had in the 36-month period, I'm showing seven of them. And they're only the seven that have anything that was caught. None of the clean inspections that are on there. Not a one. Not even the ones where I got a CVSA sticker.
Okay.
So
how can
the good outweigh the bad? And this is the response from FMCSA when I asked how do I correct the file. They said, I have to get a copy of each individual inspection and mail it or contact each individual state and have my record corrected.
You know what? And I can answer that question and clear that up, and it's not right, and please don't shoot the messenger. What happens is everybody's under a budget constraint. So my agency was as bad and as guilty of this. What they did is they entered all of the bad ones, and as they had time, they entered the good ones. It does not make it right. It doesn't make it acceptable, and that is going to be one of the issues that FMCSA is really going to have to struggle with each jurisdiction, because as these go on your file and they're time-weighted, you know, timing is going to be critical. Absolutely. If you get a bad inspection, you know, that's going to show up, but if you get a good inspection, that also needs to show up as timely as the bad ones.
Well, you know your individual history, correct?
Yes.
You got a good memory?
Yep.
I would offer you to log on to the FMCSA website, follow the link, and get your own free copy and just take a look at it.
You know what? And I've been meaning to do that, and shame on me for not doing it. But no, you're right, and that's. But yeah, to answer your question, that's exactly what happens. The big push is to get all the bad information on there first, and the good information goes on as they have time.
Right. The burden of proof is on the guy that's not going to get hired, you know, possibly down the road because all he's got is two or three bad inspections showing on his file. You know, when you get some pencil pusher in a safety office. So, you know, I have nothing more than humor for this whole project until somebody cleans up their act.
Well, and you know what?
It's
good or bad, this is the hand we're dealt with. We're stuck with this. And you bring up an excellent point, and I think what we, you know, as employees or prospective employees are going to have to do, and it doesn't make it right, but, you know, when we go in for our interview, we're going to have our own file and have copies of all the positive things that have happened to us, because they're going to have the negative ones, you know, until this gets ironed out. Is it perfect?
Absolutely. That's exactly what you should be preaching to everybody, is every time you have something good that can affect your profile, you need to keep a hard copy of it. And keep it in your employment file, so next time you are looking or go to a review, you can sit down there and make them all the nice hard copy photocopies they want to balance you back out.
No, absolutely, and that is a great point, and I want to thank you for sharing that. We are going to go next to 9224 and see if that signal has improved. Good evening.
How are we doing?
Hey, that sounds a lot.
I think this works now. Well, anyways, what I was saying earlier, though, between yourself working law enforcement now as an owner-operator, if you find yourself falling into the, getting complacent with, you know, lack of the inspections, you know, doing all the things that you find other truckers, you know, guilty of, you know, fudging on the logbook and things like this, or do you run a pretty straight ship?
I am so squeaky clean, it amazes me, and I can honestly say that. Having worked the other side of the fence, you know, I've seen the ramifications of what sloppiness and complacency does, and I am here to tell you it is not worth falling into that trap.
Sure.
Have I fallen into that trap? Absolutely. You know, I'm human, the same as everybody else, but I really fight to toe the party line and walk on the straight and narrow just because of what I've seen. And the carrier I'm leased to, you know, just does not tolerate creativity. And that is the most unpardonable sin that can be committed here. And you know what? I've been called in and raked over the coals for things in my logbook. And, you know, heck, I used to enforce this. There's no gray in their world. It's all black and white. You know, and it's really, at the end of the day, I just bought a new truck. I'm doing fairly well. You can make money and run compliant.
Sure.
It's,
I totally agree
sure
with
makes,
that. I've been an owner
sure
now for 15 years.
You know, and it sure makes it a lot easier when that annoying little park ring paper light comes on and you don't have nearly the pucker factor that a lot of people do. But as an owner operator, we have got so much to lose by not running compliant. You know, I'll give you a little scenario. And it's whether you're an LLC or an S-Corp or incorporated, whatever you are, if you are the guy driving the truck, you are personally liable, regardless
Absolutely.
Of your legal. A good friend is a safety director at a major carrier, and they had one of their owner operators that was out of hours, wanting to go home, sitting at a toll booth, paying his toll. A woman ran into the back of his truck, and they successfully sued him, the carrier, because had he been in compliance, he wouldn't have been there. He did all of the legwork for the attorneys, and the poor guy just doesn't have a leg to stand on. It cost him his truck. His family wound up divorced. You know, this guy lost everything over trying to get home and being half an hour out on a logbook.
So I think that's what a lot of people overlook out here in the industry is people, you know, taking this seriously and stuff like that. You know, I got other friends of mine who, you know, see, I'll push the envelope, run illegal and all this. And I kind of tell them, you know, it's that old Uncle John's thing, you know. Uncle John drives home from the bar drunk off his, you know, crocked out of his mind every night. But here you are driving down the road, wrong spot at the wrong time, even though you did nothing wrong, but you're over your hours. Guess who's going to be in trouble? The truck driver, not Uncle John for being drunk, but the driver is for being out there.
Absolutely. And you know what? It, to coin a phrase, you know, it splatters. And,
sure.
And when it hits the fan, it splatters, and you really don't want any sticking to you. And, you know,
absolutely.
My famous saying is there's a lawyer starving to death on every street corner, and we've become a
sure.
sue-happy society. And these cases are just gifts from heaven for an attorney because you've done all the work for them.
Oh, absolutely. Made it so simple. Well, I was just reading an article the other day. They were talking about the number of fatalities and just work zone related that are, you know, vehicle related from, you know, speed and people driving too fast and everything. And, you know, I find myself kind of interesting, you know, that how many people, you know, don't take the extra minute to slow down to 45 or 35 for the half mile or mile, whatever it is, to get through the work zone. That, you know, you see countless, you know, semi-truck drivers just, you know, plowing through these construction zones, you know, uneven keel wheels there, you know. One thing I do, I just hit my brake and let them get in front of me. And, you know, I was like, well, it's not going to slow you down. You're not going to lose any time at the end of the day. But it seems like, you know, the hours of service are always pushed right now with, you know, not being able to split, without a driver being able to split his logbook, that, you know, he feels that every single second, every single mile an hour, you know, he has to slow down. It's costing him money.
You know, and
but as
and,
an owner-operator, you know, I know as well, you know, as you do, or probably any owner-operator out here right now, that, you know, more miles isn't the certain, you know, more miles and driving faster, you know, is a sure way to put yourself into a poorhouse, you know.
Absolutely. And you know what? It becomes a time management issue. It's, you know, we're all in a big hurry to go nowhere. And you know what? At the end of the day, by racing through a construction zone, what are you going to save if there's a trooper at the end of the zone that beams you and writes you a ticket? The speed zone fines are double the money. So really,
sure.
What gained? And you know, heaven forbid you kill a worker, your new roommate, you're probably not going to like him.
I would say not. Well, it's a matter of people just not taking seriously enough what they're in charge of, what they're driving. I'm not saying everybody. I know there's a lot of, you know, quality drivers out here, but I think a lot of it is just the level of experience out here. You know, the guy in the, you know, sees the guy in front of him plowing through a, you know, construction zone at 65 mile an hour in a 35 zone, and the guy behind him says, "Eh, what the heck? You know, I'm in Tennessee right now," and you get to sections where you slow down through town where they drop it down to 55 for trucks, and you know, I've been past here all evening so far, and I go, well, you know, if they get pulled over, they get pulled over, but I'm not the one that's going to be feeding the kitty at the end of the day. But that's what separates the owner-operator business person from just a company driver who doesn't think he has anything to lose.
Well, and again, you know, we want to be a professional industry. You know, we all get mad when we're classed and thrown into that unskilled labor.
Labor, yes.
Because this is a very important skill. And, you know, to be able to safely operate a tractor trailer down the highway, that is a skill. And not every that's obvious when we look at some of our peers. And it's, you know, it's just not worth it. I was involved in an investigation for cargo securement. A piece of pipe came off a load and killed two people. You know, the driver, nice guy, he didn't start out in the morning going, you know what, today I'm going to kill two people. You know, he started his day just as we started our days. You know,
sure.
Not a care in the world, and at the end of the day, two people are dead, and his life and a lot of other people's lives were changed forever.
Families, relatives.
Oh, sure. 2 years after the fact, when it went, you know, when he finally prosecuted and the criminal side was dealt with, he hadn't driven a truck, and I'm not sure he's driven ever since then. And that was over 5 years ago. You know, my life and all the first responders, the child involved in this accident, are going to be affected forever.
Sure.
You know, just in the blink of an eye, in a heartbeat, things change, and to get, you know, wrapped into that mentality of it's never going to happen to me, boy, it'd sure be nice if that was the case, but, you know, we just can't count on that.
Like I said, just one more question for you then. Like I said, going from an enforcement to you know, driver status, what are, I guess, maybe one of the number one things that frustrates you the most, you know, versus what you see or experience between both sides?
On the enforcement side, you know, my biggest pet peeve was just complacency. And, you know, and that is alive and well. I don't own a bolt in it. It's not my responsibility. Somebody else will do that.
Sure.
You know, when I stopped somebody and I decided that I was going to put my coveralls on and do an inspection, one of the questions I asked was, what did you do for a pre-trip inspection this morning? And what did you find that I need to be aware of so that, you know, I don't spend a lot of time on those? What defects have you already identified? And you've got the neatest look. You know, they start staring at the floor and the lights on my pickup or the sigh. And, you know, they're fumbling and trying to remember the things they're supposed to check. So, you know, after a couple of those awkward moments, you know what, Skippy, just sit in the pickup. I'll do your pre-trip inspection for you. And why don't I point out the defects? and
well,
again,
that's the most expensive way to get an inspection, by the way.
Sure. You know, one way or another, you're going to have an inspection today. Is it going to be the one that you do, or is it going to be the one I do? And a classic example of complacency at its finest, I was at a compliance check outside of the area that I was assigned to. It was a joint check. And to stay CVSA certified, we have to do X amount of inspections a year. My agency said that in order to meet our agency's credentials, I had to do 120 inspections a year. So I leap out in front of this truck and wave him in, and it's a fairly new truck and a new trailer. And the driver has all the confidence in the world. He says, you know what? The truck came out of the shop 2 days ago, and this trailer was just certified last week. Knock your socks off. So I looked down the highway because this day we were kind of focusing on the junk and trying to clean things up. But, you know, it was kind of quiet. And I thought, you know what? A stat's a stat. So I started the inspection, and by the time I was done on my walk around, I had 64 wheel nuts on the ground, physically on the pavement, that I spun off with my glove. Classic example of when the wheels were coming off this train. What did you do for a pre-trip inspection? You know, he got caught and lulled into that false sense of security that everything was fine and everything was not fine. So that's the most frustrating thing that I faced. Let's go to 8118. And good evening, and you're live on Audio Road.
Good evening. I was thinking, going back to hours of service, if you're off duty and you're you were in the sleeper and then you get out and sit in the passenger seat and your buddy's driving, are you still off duty or do you become on duty?
Oh, you're talking about a team operation?
Right.
You know, that is that real gray area. You know, it's officer interpretation. You know, if you're not responsible for anything, you know what, you're off duty. But a lot of a lot of officers, if you're running a team operation, they don't want to see you in the cab of the truck. You know, personally, I kind of dealt with that. If you're just kind of sitting watching the world go by and shooting the breeze, you know, I took that as off duty. But, you know, there's really no good definition of that in the regulation.
Yeah, like in the old days, you know, we had sleepers that you barely was shoulder width and a little tiny hole to get in and out, and you couldn't fit in that.
Yeah, that's pretty, I know it well.
Yeah, and even the buddy seat was bolted down solid, and those cab overs, you didn't have much room over there either. So,
well, just to date myself, I the first truck I ever owned was an F model Mack.
The good old ones, huh?
And I'll leave it at that. But yeah, you know, the team operations, you know, my own personal opinion, the hours of service really dropped the ball when they did away with the split sleeper for teams. And I really hope that through the new rulemaking, or the new rule that is going to come down, could be this month or next month, you know, that they've addressed that and they put it back, because, you know, there's nothing harder than running team. And to expect a guy to sit off duty and just rattle around behind the driver's seat and try and sleep while you're bouncing up and down the highway for 10 hours, I think was just insane. But again, somebody way smarter than me dreamed that one up.
Yeah. What's the best argument or trying to convince the officer, if he's leaning towards your on duty, what kind of argument would you use to convince him otherwise?
You know, it's show the guy the sleeper. You know, can you physically lay here and beat yourself up for all this time? I've had my if you're current and you can show them that, you know, you were back there for 6 hours, I've slept all I can sleep. You know, I'm just sitting here as a tourist. That's the road you can go down. And again, it's officer discretion. I really wish they would address that in the rules. And I really wish they would change the rules to allow more flexibility for teams, because, you know, I don't think the new rule is safe, to be totally honest, because I think the teams are running more fatigued now than they ever did. Are you currently in a team operation?
I'm not normally in a team operation, no, but I was talking to a Colorado CSP officer, and they were in the mix-up part of it. So that's where that came from. You know, he definitely was saying it was on duty.
Yeah, it's, you know, the interpretation, you know, for teams is one driving and one sleeping. And is that realistic? I don't think so. But again, you know, it's the discretion of the guy on the side of the road, and right or wrong, the guy with the gun and the badge wins.
Yeah. Well, back in the 70s, you know, we didn't have air conditioning and very little time down there in Arizona that you could sleep in the sleeper, you know, narrow little box like that. And so we kind of split the hours, which you can't do anymore.
Yeah, and like I say, I really, really hope that gets addressed in the new rulemaking, and we can go back to a little saner set of rules for the guys. Thank you very much for the call. We are going to go to, let's see here, 8699 again. And
yeah,
welcome back. Yeah, Matt.
I didn't realize I pushed the button again, but I was...
we're back.
The call here. I'm sitting at home on the laptop, so I went and I tried looking up my CVSA 2010 score. I wasn't getting very far, but just looked through the SAFER system again because I haven't looked at it in quite a while. And, yeah, it's, you know, the industry averages are in the 20% for all of them for out of services, and pretty happy that mine says 000.
You know, and that's really what you want to strive for. My carrier, for example, you know, we're a fairly big carrier, and what has caused us some grief is warning tickets. We are over our threshold in cargo securement. You know, and we're a van carrier, so that makes it quite a challenge. And with a conversation with our safety director this week, you know, it's status quo is no longer the business model. If you remain static and don't make any changes, the way CSA 2010 works, you're judged in a peer group. And if your peer group suddenly knuckles down and realizes the error in their ways, even though you've done nothing to improve or get yourself in more trouble, you're going to wind up with more of a black eye just by doing nothing. So, you know, that ship has pretty much sailed. We're all going to have to work a little harder on compliance.
Oh, exactly. And that's, you know, my point on a lot of things. It's, you know, like you say, it's funny how some guys, when they get in trouble, you know, it's the first thing they're going to do is, oh, the mechanic's fault or the carrier's fault, or it's anybody's fault but the driver and the guy, you know, holding the steering wheel. And
absolutely.
That's just not the case.
Well, and the best case I've got for that is when you're pointing the finger at everybody else, look down at your fist. You know, there's three fingers pointing back at you. So.
Yep.
You're the captain of your own ship, and you're kind of the author of your own destiny, and we can stamp our feet, and we can shake our fist, and we can complain, and we can say that you know, it's not our fault, and somebody needs to do something about this, and it's not fair, and it's not right, and you know, I'm the first one to admit, is this a perfect system? Absolutely not. Is there room for improvement? You betcha there is. Will it change? You know, it's run by bureaucrats and politicians, so you probably have a better chance of hurting cats and chickens.
Yeah. And when it does change, there'll still be room for improvement.
Absolutely. So, you know what? We're stuck with this. Whether we like it or not, this is the hand we're dealt. And it's the same thing with the hours of service. Whatever rule comes down, we're stuck with it. You know, we can throw our hands up in the air and we can say we're going to quit and we're going to sell our trucks and we're not going to do this and that. Somebody is going to do this or that. And, you know, we may as well get into the mindset now that, you know, how can I profit and be compliant and make this work for me? Thank you very much for jumping back in there, and we're going to move along. And we are going now to 4844. And welcome to the show.
Hey, it's Hugh again. Yeah, that's the one. And talking about pre-trip inspections. Okay.
Yep.
By the way, this isn't Hugh. This is Joe.
Okay.
I don't do a pre-trip inspection. That's why I'm Joe and not Hugh.
Okay,
I do a post-trip inspection. I do a pre-trip inspection if I'm just starting a trip. But at the end of each day, I do a post-trip, and in the morning, I walk around and just do a walk around right quick, make sure my fifth wheel hasn't been unlocked and that my tires are still inflated, and that nobody has hit me during the night. Is that acceptable?
You know, that is. It's the way the legislation is written. That's perfectly acceptable.
I was just responding to your comment that when you were doing inspections, you would ask what I did on my pre-trip inspection this morning. My answer would have to be, well, I didn't do a pre-trip inspection this morning. I just walked around, made sure my tires were inflated and that nobody had run into me during the night. And last night, I got into there with my coveralls and my creeper and checked to make sure all my brakes were still adjusted and that all my springs weren't showing anywhere and that I had good bushings and all my lug nuts were tight and such as that. Go ahead.
But that's the A answer, because you can tell me you at least did something.
Okay.
The majority of people I dealt with, the truck started, the XM satellite radio worked. Life was good. Really, what more is there to check? And you know what? That is the sad reality. So whether you did your inspection last night when you parked or first thing this morning when you got out of bed, the key is you did an inspection, and you could tell me, you know what? I've got a crack spring. I know it's an out-of-service item. I've got an appointment with the TA 15 miles down the road in Parowan, Utah. I ran out of hours here at this rest area. You know, you can call the shop and verify that, and I'm on my way down there to have that repaired. And, you know, if you could answer that question like that.
Hey. Okay.
You were,
the main question was, do I need to do a full inspection every morning if I do one every night? And,
no.
So that is acceptable, though, right?
Yeah. As long as in that 24-hour period, there was an inspection done.
Gotcha.
Hopefully that answered the question.
It did, absolutely. Thank you very much. By the way, it was a great show. It was very informative, and it's always good to be reminded to be compliant.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Joe. I really appreciate the call, and I really appreciate all the feedback we got tonight. And again, I'd like to thank Kevin and Lisa for the opportunity to come back on. And thanks for sharing your evening with me. Stay safe.
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm a guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm working for the state on the highway patrol. Well, you know me when you see me, cause my door's painted white, with my siren screaming and my flashing red light. I work all day and I work all night just to keep a law and order, trying to If I write you out a ticket, then you better drive slow. I'm just doing my job on the highway patrol. I'm a highway patrol.